Good morning. This is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We're here every Saturday morning right here on News Talk 870. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 727-8977 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I always like to thank John for hosting and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. John, how are you?
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed watching the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that was, it was actually worked out pretty well last weekend. We were able to go over to a friend's house and catch a little bit of Super Bowl party. And it was nice to see, the Broncos have that win. And I think potentially maybe someone's last game there. What do you think, Tom? You were calling it.
Yeah, you know, I don't see why you couldn't run off in the sunset right now with that Super Bowl win.
Yeah.
Now, he had an awesome career, so I was just soaking it up. But that's probably his last game, and
it was kind of fun to see. Now, it's not the pick of the week. I'll have something else for you, but it was a rental around the Super Bowl. So my rental of the week, which we've never had before, is Beyonce, of course, had to rent a place for the weekend, Tom.
Okay.
And how much do you think the house was per night that she rented for her Super Bowl performance?
It's probably something crazy. I don't know, $30,000 a night?
Actually, she was maybe on a budget.
Oh, okay.
It was $10,000 a night.
Oh. Reasonable, Beyonce.
It was off of an Airbnb listing, which is a popular site for people to go to for house rental. The house looked incredible. I figured I might be able to pull it off if we got 20 couples together.
Uh-huh.
and split the cost.
But I was thinking it had to be some crazy number. So, you know, actually it sounds reasonable for a Beyonce house.
For her, yes, it did sound reasonable. But the place was really, 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 really cool.
I did enjoy that halftime show. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, no, I totally thought it was good. So it was fun to get my real estate slant in there on the Super Bowl.
What was your favorite commercial?
Heinz, I think
the wiener dogs.
Oh, the wiener dogs was pretty good. Okay,
I like the little intestine one, and he was like he was constipated or had diarrhea or something. A little intestine that was running around. You guys see that?
I saw that was a regular commercial.
Was it really?
I don't know if that was my favorite one. I kind of got a kick out of the Bud Light party that they had the most constituents in the U.S.
Oh yeah,
and the political was that Amy Schumer in that one?
I believe so.
I think she was in that one.
So Seth Hogen.
I did get a little kick. I got a kick out of that one too.
According to the advertising people, the two best ones based on impressions and consumer reviews and Facebook and social media were Kevin Hart's overbearing father on the date, the car ad,
right.
and the Heinz wiener dogs.
Yep.
And the most disturbing was the puppy monkey baby
that
energy.
Was extremely disturbing, and I think I've heard more than 20
puppy
people say that.
I'm in therapy now.
Say that same thing. I did kind of like, the other one I liked too was the Steve Harvey apology. How they came in to say he got the cell phone ad wrong.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was a nice little comeback from him after he messed up the Miss America deal. So.
I think they've all redone that commercial, all the cell phone companies, by the way.
Absolutely. So, yeah, Super Bowl was great. I tell you what, the weather was fantastic, and that has made, like we talked about on the real estate side, I mean, that has made our early spring market jump. I'll do updated numbers at the end of the month for the show, but just so our listeners know, as I've really been watching that inventory number daily and weekly, we reported, you know, last month that we were down to 500 at one point, 580 active listings. As the spring market comes up and we start to get more inventory coming online, the hard part is we also get more sales coming online because more people are looking that time of year. So that number has increased a little bit, but it has not changed dramatically. Just 2 days ago, ran the updated numbers. 620 active listings, which is not a lot, especially when you consider in the last 30 days, there had been 308 that have gone under contract, meaning that we're still only looking at a 2 to 2.5 month supply of homes. And we consider the balanced market to be 5 to 6 months. So still where we're having to be super, super aggressive on that side of things when we look at selling, and more importantly on the aggressiveness, helping our buyers get into homes when there's limited amounts to look at. Before we get into our topic today, I do always like to hit up our house of the week. And I thought in honor of Mardi Gras week, I would come up with a house in the French Quarter. So off of Governor Nichols Street, right outside of the French Quarter there, there is a house for sale. And close to all of that action, Tom, it's going to cost you a little bit of money. And we're talking $849,000 is about the lowest price one I could find close to that. And they were saying earlier when I looked at the news story that a lot of businesses, because that party's so big in that city, they just give up on the employees showing up that week and shut down. Uh-huh. So I can imagine it gets a little crazy around there.
Yeah, I've only been there once, and it definitely wasn't Mardi Gras, but it was wild down there.
Yep, absolutely. So when we're looking at the market that we were talking about with the lower inventory and what happens, last week's show, Tom and I had prepared what we called the biggest mistakes, avoiding the mistakes a buyer can make. And then Tom talked about those mistakes on the lending side. The funny part about that show is I had actually prepared information for both the buyer and seller side, and we only made it through the buy side of things. So one of the things I really wanted to hit up, and that was really five mistakes that sellers should avoid in today's market. And one of the things with that is that we're in a super hot market right now, right? So because of that, and everybody has talked about those supply numbers that I just went over, and you look at, one of the things that we end up doing in that market is sometimes we push the limit a little bit on pricing because there's lower inventory, and now we're getting some price appreciation, and there's not as much. When that happens, sometimes the number one mistake that I wrote down that can really happen for sellers in this market and that we can see, and that is not taking your first buyer seriously. And so there's been a lot of different studies of this, and we've looked throughout the years in real estate, and 90% of the time in real estate, your first buyer is going to be your best buyer in terms of price, terms, and getting the contract put together. So a lot of people are like, okay, well, why is this? And so one of the reasons is that the way we've made these search criteria available, where people can search in a specific area and they can be looking in a certain neighborhood, a lot of times what happens is we have a large pool of buyers that are out there just waiting for a house in a specific area and a specific neighborhood to show up. And that means they have a huge, huge desire to want to be in that particular place. So when one of those houses pops up, generally your first buyer is that person that has been on the sidelines waiting and looking, waiting, looking. And so when they show up, a lot of times this is the best chance to negotiate your highest possible deal. Now, on the flip side, from a seller's perspective, what happens a lot of times in these situations? You put the house on the market, say you're selling a $250,000 house. The next day, there's a showing, and that buyer writes an offer for $248,000. Tom, what's in one day? What's the immediate thought if you're selling?
Geez, did I list my house for high enough?
Absolutely.
Should I ask for more? Right?
Absolutely. And so, that is a very, very common situation that can happen. A lot of times, on the flip side, the perspective we're not seeing is that this buyer had very particular needs. They wanted to be in this location at this spot. Now, on the other side of things, you're saying to yourself as a seller, well, if that's the case, then they should be willing to pay more for it. The other side of the coin is that buyer is working with an agent, and they're saying to their agent, hey, yes, this is exactly where I want to be in the location I want to be in, but just to do me a favor, could you go ahead and run comparables for me and make sure I'm not overpaying? Take a look at it. And when we started this story, being in a hot market, what did I say sellers have a tendency to do? Push up the price point. Mm-hmm. So if they're doing that and the buyer's agent is doing their job that's protecting the buyer, they'll look around and say, gosh, you know what? Based upon the data and the sales, and they have the access to the same data I have as I'm counseling sellers, they'll say, we're pushing it a little bit here. You know, I really don't want you to go over a certain number because I can't find justification for it. So that's the common ground that you're trying to find. And a lot of times, that first buyer, you'll have the best leverage of being able to get the most amount of money for the house. So one of the things that we're always counseling people is taking a look at that situation with that first buyer, giving them a little bit of leeway that you might not be given to some other people later on down the road.
Yeah, well, it makes sense. Just because you got the first offer on the first day doesn't mean that there's another buyer in the wings. It could be 2 months before the next one comes along.
And that's the unknown. I mean, if we knew that situation perfectly, I probably wouldn't have a job, you know, because we'd know exactly how many buyers are waiting. We could make a calculated, you know, mathematical equation and figure it out. But not knowing that sometimes can be overstated. So our job is to really look at the data we have available, the sales price we have, and make an educated decision of are we maximizing the seller's return in that situation. Second biggest mistake that we run into a lot, and this happens sometimes in a market like we have now, and that is a hotter market with lower inventory, and that is offering buyers credits for work you'd rather not do. And so some of the things that pop up sometimes, maybe you have a leaky faucet, maybe you have a couple windows where the seals are broken, maybe the carpets are in so-so situation, they have a little extra wear. So in a normal market, when there's a lot of choices, you know, you might say, gosh, let's get that stuff spiffed up and ready to kind of maximize our value. In a hot market, you might be tempted to make the mistake of saying, you know what, we can let some of that curb appeal stuff go. People are lucky there's even a house for sale. And so that can end up being a little bit of a mistake because it is very, very difficult sometimes. And the line I hear the most from people is, well, I don't know what color carpet the buyer's going to want, so I'd much rather just give them a credit and let them make the choice. The problem is when they come through your house, they're not making that comparison in their mind. In their mind, they're not comparing your carpet to new carpet, that because it's an abstract idea, right? They're having to purchase magic flying carpet up here in a bubble in their head and how it looks in that house. And for a lot of people that are not artists, I would be in that category. It's difficult to make that comparison. What are they comparing against? The other two houses they just saw today.
Right, and they're probably new construction with brand new carpet, right?
Yeah, absolutely, because we don't have as much inventory right now. They very well could have gone through a model home, and so they're trying to make that decision of building new and waiting 3.5 to 4 months or 3.5 to 4 months, or potentially purchasing. So a lot of times you can go with a neutral type carpet, a neutral type paint. You can make those upgrades, and that many, many times will be the difference between a buyer going ahead, pulling the trigger on that house versus skipping to the next one that went ahead and made the changes. So in some situations, yes, a credit is applicable, and you can do that. A lot of it depends upon who our competition is, how long we're willing to wait on the market, and exactly what we're looking at. So that's a case-by-case basis, and that's one of those things where you call us out, have us walk through your house, go over the data, and then together as the seller and the agent, we make an educated decision on what best meets your needs. When I come back from the break, we're going to talk to Tom a little bit on the lending side of things, some misconceptions they see out there. We're also going to go through the next two or three big mistakes that sellers can avoid in this hot real estate market right now.
Right here on News Talk 870.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We've been talking a little bit about our lower inventory sellers type market and going over some of the cautions that we still need to have as sellers in this market. Yeah, it's definitely something to consider. I always say it's a good thing right now. There's a lot of advantages, but it's kind of like raining in the snowball before it gets a little bit too out of control. There's also some limits that we still have to work within. So before I get out of control with that snowball, like myself, and run out the rest of the show, let's let you talk on the lending side about some of the things you see and what's going on in your world right now. Boy, those rates have been volatile up and down. But then, man, all of a sudden, I tell you what, they got low last week.
Yeah, you know, I can't quote rates on there.
But trust me, I can say stuff as a realtor, and they were low.
Low.
Like, the Fed raises rates, and Tom and I are expecting them to go up, but then because of other economic factors, they actually went lower. So, yeah.
And I think the last time I saw rates this low was 2012.
Yeah.
And if the listeners remember from our recent shows we've done, 2012 was like the lowest it's ever been in the history of rates.
So, very, very, very interesting and exciting time, especially to have that available in an early spring market. Mm-hmm. So, what's going on else on the lending side with you?
Well, you know, last week we talked about mistakes that people make in the process of getting a loan. And so I started thinking about, well, since we're going to continue this show with the sellers making mistakes on your end, I was thinking, well, maybe I'll talk about mistakes after people get the loan. And I was going to make a big list, but I've pretty much filled up my segment here with biweekly payments. And I get this question all the time. How do they work? Do we offer them? So I want to set the record straight on biweekly payments from my perspective. So I don't know of any lender out there that offers biweekly payments. These are all done through third-party companies. You pay that company, and they pay the mortgage. Now, when you're dealing with an extra company, that company has to make money, right?
Absolutely. Otherwise, why they would be out of business.
Exactly. So they're making money somewhere. So that's what I'm going to talk about. Now, your payment to the lender, they're due on the first. So when you're paying every 2 weeks, you're going to get yourself, when you set up the biweekly payments, ahead of payments, because you're always going to be 2 weeks in arrears. You'll pay this 2 week period, then the next week, and now we have enough to pay the 1 month. But you can't do that. You can't start on the first and expect you to have a full payment due on the first. So you get yourself ahead by a month to be able to do that. Now, typically, these third-party companies charge you a monthly service fee for that. They're all different. You're going to want to check with those companies. But I think it's usually like $5 to $10 a month that you pay, and they take that right out of your monthly payment. Now, on a biweekly payment, in case you haven't heard about it, you pay half of your mortgage payment every 2 weeks. So let's assume that your payment, just easy numbers, your payment every month is $1,200. You're going to pay $600 every 2 weeks. Now, because there's 52 weeks in a year, not 48, if you're paying once a month, it feels like 48 weeks. But because there's 52 weeks in a year, by the end of the year, you'll have made a full extra payment. Now, you're paying a little bit extra every month, and by that 12th month, again, an extra $1,200. Now, if you read the fine print on these companies, they're going to hold that extra payment, because you're paying a little bit extra throughout the year, they're going to hold that extra principal until the 12th month, and then it all gets applied at once on the 12th month. So when we look at how do these companies make their money, the first is on that service fee that they charge you every month, and also off of using your money for those 12 months to make interest before they release it back to you. So a lot of people don't realize that. Now, the reason I use $1,200 as an example for a payment, because I can easily divide that by 12 and say you're better off to just pay $100 extra per month. So the reason that is because when you pay $100 extra per month on your regularly once a month payment, that's applied immediately towards principal. So then the next month, your interest is less because now you're paying interest on a smaller balance. Now, in the short run, this doesn't make a big difference, right? Because it's great to pay $1,200 at the end of the year versus once a month paying an extra $100. But when you're talking about 3, 4, 10, 15 years, this is really going to add up and make a difference. So it's the same concept we use on your retirement accounts, you know, that compounding interest. So you make $5,000 in interest, and instead of having $100,000, now you got $105,000 in your 401k. And then it goes up by 10% again. But now you're getting interest on the $105,000,
yep,
not the $100,000. And so that compounding interest, it's like reverse when you're paying it extra monthly, because you're just going to exponentially drop that interest down by paying it per month versus doing the biweekly. Now, with that being said, biweekly payments are still a good idea in certain circumstances. The first one is if you know yourself and you're just not disciplined to pay extra, you're just going to make that minimum payment that it says, then do biweekly payments because it's going to help you. You're going to pay extra, but you're going to feel like you're not paying extra, but you are. And also, if it's just really convenient, if it just works with your paycheck, so you get paid every 2 weeks, and you like having the smaller payment twice every 2 weeks versus the larger payment once a month, if it's just very convenient, well, then for a lot of people, there's added value in you know, having that convenience. And you could put a price on that, on what you're willing to pay for it. But if you tell yourself, I'm going to pay an extra payment a year, whether I do it biweekly or whether I do a little bit extra per monthly, then save yourself some money. Don't pay the third-party servicer. Just pay a little bit extra per month.
No, that's good information, Tom. And we see these a lot. And for a lot of our clients out there, you know, these companies buy the lists of new mortgages in the counties. And so a lot of times you'll get the mail the month or 2 months after you close on that loan because they're buying those lists. And so you'll see these offers come out from your mortgage companies, from third, that they have sold the list to third-party companies. Mm-hmm. And so you'll start to see those come out. But you're right. In fact, most of the literature I've seen on those programs, whether you take your payment and divide by 12 or you do one of these programs, most of them end up on a 30-year loan, taking your term down to roughly 23 years.
Yep.
And so you see those knock about 6.5 to 7 years off your term.
Yeah, so that's what I usually see. As I say, 5 to 7 years is kind of the average. So again, biweekly payments, I'm not saying they're a bad program, but it's just better to pay extra per month. If you have a set amount you're going to pay extra per year, try to pay it monthly. But again, if you don't feel like you're disciplined enough or just really works with your budget, then do the biweekly.
Absolutely. Tom, thanks for that information on those payments and taking a look at some of the realistic things that we see out there in the mortgage company and then making sense to them. We're on to a few of the other problems and mistakes that we see sellers make in a hot market like this. And the next one that I wrote down, and this one pops up a lot of the time, and that is making highly personal changes to your home. And we see this come up sometimes, and sometimes it can really be an issue. It's just one of those things where you have to cringe just a little bit. For instance, a lot of times I have folks that have, game rooms or exercise rooms downstairs, and you see what they've done is they might have had the experience of going to UW, University of Washington, so they've painted their downstairs game room purple and gold. Well, in the Tri-Cities, that might put off about 80% of the residents that went to WSU. And so you think, gosh, is that really going to stop somebody from buying a house?
Maybe.
Maybe, yeah. But maybe it's not that case. Maybe it is that they were on the fence about it, and then they went down into the basement, and they just, this pushed them over the edge.
They're like, we'll find another house.
It's like, oh my gosh, I knew it was a sign, right? Uh-huh. And yeah. So it's those signs you're trying to stop. And I mean, I've even seen inlaid hardwood floors with the cougar symbol on it. Hmm. I've seen them in tiled into the bottom of swimming pools. And so, you know, those are highly, highly personal changes to a house. And a lot of people, sometimes sellers, the ones that are really going after top dollar, they'll rip that out before we put it on the market, make the changes to put it back. And that can make a big, big difference. Another highly personal change that we'll see sometimes is, for instance, we'll see very, very bright colored walls or neon colored bedrooms. If they're very, very offensive, I'm the first one to tell people when I walk through, that is not normal. If you want to get top dollar, you want to get it sold in those first couple showings, we're going to have to make those changes. So we're not afraid to tell people that in those situations. It's nothing where we're trying to offend anybody. I always tell people it's just about getting the home sold. So it's very, very easy for us to take a look at those changes and make those recommendations. The fourth item that I wrote down, actually, and we talked a little bit about this in conjunction with everything else, and there's a lot of times there is the temptation to do this in a hot market, and that is still the old adage where it comes down to overpricing your home. Back in the day, with less information out there, less statistics, less property information over the course of years, it was easier to say, you know what, maybe we'll get lucky and we'll get what we want. want, and somebody won't care at all about comparables or data, and they'll just buy the house. That scenario has become so much more less and less likely. When you have access to Zillow on your phone, Trulia on your phone, property data, the assessor sites, all of that information is just a click away. On top of that, there's 40 companies out there, tech companies, that are taking and making scientific algorithms with all of these sources of data and coming up with an estimate of the price point that a lot of times the consumer and the buyer is going to have that data. You are not going to be fooling anybody like you used to be able to with that much of an overpricing. So having us really take a look at that data, tell you what it means, interpret the data, and make the proper recommendation is a huge, huge deal. The last one I wrote down, we don't run into this a lot of the times, but it does come up. And the last one I wrote down that causes us a lot of grief, and that is making your home difficult to show. It's a hard process. You're having to leave your house. You're having to leave all the lights on. You're having to always keep it clean.
Go home on your lunch break and get your dog.
Go home on your lunch break and get... That's a perfect example. And so the thing about that situation is other people are busy too. Other professionals also, it's an inconvenience for them to try to find time to see your house. And so we're matching up those inconveniences. Are you more inconvenienced as the seller, or is the buyer more inconvenienced to try to find time to show it? So it becomes an issue to where, yes, it is hard. Yes, it's difficult. But making the house as available as possible to get the showings, that makes a big, big difference. So making your house available to show, that is one of the biggest things that we really work with people. Try to make it as convenient as possible to get people in when they need to see the house. Now, I talked and talked about the lower inventory, but the fact of the matter is we have been hitting the streets to get new inventory out there for people, and we have some great, great new listings. Real quick, on the market, this is over in Creekstone in Kennewick, 1414 South Harrison, and this is an absolute stunning two-story house, 4 bedrooms, 3 baths, plus a den and a bonus room. This is over 3,300 square feet in Creekstone, just a couple-year-old house, a lot of the upgrades, tons of tile countertops, stainless steel appliances, fenced backyard, and that's coming in at $328,000. Mm. So right below that $100 a square foot mark for a newer home in Creekstone. Super, super excited about that with a lot of inquiries on that one. Pick number two, 3802 Cook Lane in Pasco. This house, I literally call this one better than new. It's a 3-bedroom, 3-bath Rambler, 1,765 square feet. This has hardwood floors, gorgeous tiled accents in the entry. It has the open layout that's great for entertaining with the great room, the gas fireplace, granite countertops in the kitchen. Completely, completely dialed in. This home is really only 1 year old home. Job transfer forces the people to go ahead and sell. They installed high-end, top-to-down, bottom blinds, did a bunch of the move-in work on that new house, priced at $275,000. And this is just one of those unfortunate deals where the seller looked at us and said, hey, we have a job transfer, we have to move. Mm-hmm. And at this price point that we put it at, because we know that's the price it's going to need to sell, it's unfortunate, but the seller's losing money. I mean, they looked at us and said, the job transfer is more important to us. We're going to make it up. This is one of those deals with what they've put in the house, though, and how quickly they have to sell, that they're going to have to take a loss to sell that house. So that one's very, very competitive and priced to move, and it is a gorgeous house. Pick number three, 514 Wagon Court in Richland. Attention, North Richland. Okay, we talk about low inventory. There's always low inventory in North Richland because it sells so quick. Mm-hmm. And so on top of low inventory in North Richland, we have low inventory in the market. Very, very rare for us to get this 3-bedroom, 3 baths, and a den. This is Rambler with a basement, 2238 square feet. You've got formal living room, fireplace opens up into the formal dining room, master bedrooms on the main level with double closets and its own bath. Some of the older North Richlands, you don't get that. And then we've got a large den office, second kitchen in the lower level with the 3-quarter bath down there also, fenced backyard, and you're coming in $240,000. Hmm. So those are brand new listings out there. Great, great inventory that we've got this week. go to KenmoreTeam.com and check that out. We have launched our new website, so we've got a new look, upgraded search functions, very, very user-friendly. We're constantly, with the technology changes, having to update that. So please go to KenmoreTeam.com, check that out. Tom, if people have questions about lending, how should they get a hold of you?
Call me at the office at 783-7300 or go to my website anytime, TomCoinHomeLoans.com.
All right, and we'll be right back here next week.
Right here on News Talk 870.